two contrasting readings, but readings that actually tell us a lot. And most of us think we know Mark's Gospel. But yet we don't always take time to explore what is there. Jesus had a busy time, he'd come across the lake, and as usual was met with a crowd. And in a way that Mark quite often writes things, he starts telling us one thing, and puts something else in the middle, and then finishes off the first bit. And sometimes they're usually related in some way. So here, we have two people. A woman who for 12 years had continuous internal bleeding. Can you imagine it? I guess the females of us here would probably have a better concept of what it must have been like than perhaps some of them then. But I might be doing men an injustice. It wouldn't have been very pleasant. But everything else, by Jewish laws, she had been shunned from society. So she was in a state. And she spent all her money on trying to find cures. But nothing worked. And because she was seen unclean by Jewish law, she would not have been able to mix with society. So she had been very lonely. And so the things were not told by Mark, which we can use our imagination for. Did she have a husband? Did she have children? And if so, how did she communicate with them? But that's a bit in the middle. But before that, we had this ruler of the synagogue rushing headlong to find Jesus and to fall at Jesus' feet and say, please come and heal my daughter, who is 12. Don't think he actually said 12 at that point, but. And I find it quite amazing because the two of them, in their own way, had to step outside of a situation which they'd normally find themselves in. For the woman, she'd been shunned by society. And somehow she knew that Jesus was passing, and she was just hoping that somehow she could make contact with him. Jairus, the ruler of the synagogue, had to put aside so many things. How do you think? I would guess most of the time he would have gone by Jewish law and he would probably have made comments about Jesus, not always positive. And he probably wasn't even sure who Jesus was. So he had to forget any prejudice about who Jesus might be. And we often have prejudice, don't we, about who we think somebody is. Perhaps by the way they dress, or what they do, or don't do. He had to put that aside. Sometimes we need to do that to really get to know an individual. He's not the sort of person I would imagine that would just go rushing somewhere and fall at somebody's feet. It's certainly not something I do normally. And frankly, we don't have to do it before the king. You just courtesy. So his dignity was at stake. And he had to let go of everything. He had to forget what others would think of him, which might well include his friends, because he was desperate. He was full of love for his daughter, and he wanted healing for his daughter. He was prepared to do anything. And I'm sure as you ponder on that, you'll be able to reflect that Jesus gave up everything for us because of his love for you, for me. So there we have that two scenarios. Jairus came first, and Jesus said to him, I'll come. I don't know how you would react. You know, you want to do something, get on with something, and somebody interrupts, and that person you want to do something with feels they need to talk to the other person or do something else. If you're like me, you stand there and get highly frustrated and really want to feel you want to drag them. I don't know if you've ever had that experience. So I've had it on numerous occasions, which probably says a lot about me. But he had to wait there on tenderfoot, saying, thinking to himself, come on, come on, don't do this, come on, come on, she's dying. And yet that woman, Jesus made time. And we need to make time for those who don't what we usually do. And perhaps we don't really sense their need until we start making time for them. I guess initially the woman probably had no idea of even getting anywhere near Jesus. I think she probably just wanted to see. But as the crowds were moving to Jairus' house, the opportunity came, and she said, if I just touch the hem of his garment. Absolute desperation, and in the hope that nobody would see her. And yet Jesus sensed that somehow a healing power had come out of him. It's utterly ridiculous, isn't it, saying to say, who touched me? You know, disciples, I think we'd think are probably right. You know, all this mob around you, all this bloody crowd around you. There's no way that you can find no one who's touched you. But because that woman has suddenly realised that her bleeding had stopped and she was feeling better, she felt she had to do something. She had to say, it was me. Do we ever to be Christians, to what God has done to us through Christ, when we have the opportunity, we are challenged? Or do we try not to, try to avoid it? And then Jesus says to her, she explains everything. He says, your faith has made you whole. So it wasn't just that healing, it's that holistic healing. Then she said, he said, go your way in peace, daughter. He was acknowledging her. And we don't always acknowledge those who love Jesus, who are perhaps different to us or worship in different ways. So he was saying to her, you are accepted. You come back into society, be part of it. And you all know what happened. As all this was going on, people ran up to Jairus and said, don't worry, don't get used to coming, your daughter's died. I mean, what message should you give to anyone at any time? It's as if his hope was shattered at that moment. And Jesus' word for him was slightly different. Trust, have faith, and believe. And sometimes, like Jairus, when things don't seem to be going quite right, we just have to have that faith, that trust, and believe that God is at work in ways we don't always know. And so, Jesus went to Jairus and took three of his disciples with him, Peter, James, and John. He said to all those who were there, the official mourners and wailers. One thing I haven't realised, I'm quite often wondered why those people are around, but one of the reasons was it meant that the family, those close to the person who died, could actually let go of their emotions. They were everybody else, they wouldn't matter. And sometimes we try and keep our feelings in separate all the time. Many of us is probably what we've been brought up to, but sometimes we need to be given permission to actually say what we feel and act how we feel. And he said, she's not dead, she has slept. And we know that he came back to life. She brought her back to life. She was 12 years old. Interesting. Apparently, for a young girl, the coming of age to become a woman was 12 years and one day. At least that's what I read. And I find it interesting that we're only told she was 12 years. So she was just about to come into society as a woman. A child being given the opportunity through Jesus' love to become part of society and make a difference. The woman would be an outcast for 12 years. Jesus was saying, come back and be a full part of society and community. And what he's saying to everyone, and what he says to us in a situation like that, welcome them, include them, embrace them with love. And for both of them, they came to Jesus because they were left with no other option. In many ways, it's their last hope. If Jesus failed, that was it. And so many of us, and many people throughout the world, cry out to Jesus at the last moment in different ways. What we do know is that he hears and he listens and he responds. When our lives are quite comfortable, it's very easy to push Jesus to one side. But it's often our vulnerability that we reach out to him. And my prayer for myself and each of us is that constantly we might recognise time and time again that we cannot do anything in our own strength to share his love. It's only through his Spirit working through us as we bring things to him and ask him to become more and more part of our lives. So let us ponder on that. And then I was reflecting on that reading of 2 Corinthians, where Paul is urging the Corinthians to continue collecting money, to go to the third in Jerusalem, there's been a famine, and around that area was hard as yet. And he then compared them to saying, well, the churches in Macedonia, much less poorer than you, but they have given because of their love. A reminder that Jesus, out of love, died for us. But he's not saying to the Corinthians, give it all. As Mark read at the end, desire is not that others might be relieved while you are hard pressed, but there might be equality. Is wanting the best for each of us, using resources that we have to enable others to live. And that really is a challenge as we think, if you haven't already decided, about who you're going to vote for in this election coming up. Scary now, but please come. And then it's that challenge, how do we continue, whoever's elected RMP, to keep pushing that equality, recognising that there is sufficient to go around, not only in this country, but across the world, if we begin to be generous with what we have, and to look outside and think what are the needs of others. Macedonian churches did it out of love. And Paul said to Corinthians, you're brilliant at everything. Your faith, your love, your worship, you name it, you're great at it, but sometimes we have to allow God to speak to us in ways and challenge areas of our lives which we don't like. And for Corinthians, it was how to use the financial gifts they have. Out of it comes love. We respond to Christ, and then our love for Christ is shown. And so may the Lord bless each one of us as we we continue to live for him and allow him to live in and through us, to bless us.